Well, Telejohns, La Liga Weekly, and welcome to the Braithwaite at Barcelona era, as it will be known in the future. Will it last longer than the Kevin Prince Boateng era? Well, so far, so good. Okay, a horse could have done as many keepy uppies at its presentation, and his first cross landed halfway up the stand, but then he set up Messi for a goal. Fancy that. Riley got the back of Messi and pretending everything's okay. Luckily, President Bartomeu would never do such a thing. Say, I've been nice, so please don't set your Putin-esque bot army on me. That's inflation, by the way. In 1997, that fee would get you a Ronaldo. In 2004, it bought a Deco, and by 2020, a Braithwaite. Anyway, all that makes it sound like it's going badly for Barca, but we know Real Madrid have a way of alleviating any crisis Barcelona can suffer, suddenly looking hapless and hazardless ahead of Manchester City in the Clásico. By the way, Diego Simeone is furious. The moment his back's turned, central midfielders start making runs into the opposition box, Atleti attack in the second half, and João Félix scores. Not those slackers know every La Liga game is a dry run for beating Liverpool. That's invincible Liverpool, by the way, from the best league in the world. Elsewhere, it's been a bad week for Valencia, a worse week for Leganés, and those snowflakes at Getafe want to get themselves sorted out, Terry. So where do we start, Terry? So, well, you know what? You miss out. You know, if Martin Braithwaite could have been a Barcelona striker, Terry, you just came along at the wrong moment. You had your release clause wasn't up at the right time in your career. Go on, analyse that one for us.
Well, I find it interesting, actually. It's almost like a project where a player that... I'm not going to be cruel. I think since he's been at Leganés and been playing in Spanish football, I think he's been good. I can see why Barcelona have done it. And perhaps there should have been cases where they would have taken opportunities to bring players who are happy to be in the squad, to be capable backups. And we've seen, there's been cases over the last decade or so where players that you wouldn't normally associate with Barcelona have gone in, provided that backup from the bench. And let's give him the benefit of the doubt. I think he's been good in La Liga so far. He's going to be playing with better players in a better team that win more games than they lose. He's going to get more service and supply than he's ever had in his life. And I think he's a capable player. I'm not for one moment suggesting he should be first choice at Barcelona, but I think we should give him the benefit of the doubt. I don't think this is the scenario we had last season when Kevin Prince Boateng came in. The player was at the wrong end of his career. He was available. He was pretty much free or very cheap, and we barely saw him. I think with Braithwaite, he does provide, you know, some good backup to alleviate the stress on the few strikers they have at the club. So I'm astonished with his... going back to his presentation, which you made a joke of, why do players set the bar so high? Just do a couple of flick-ups, control it on your thigh and well it into the crowd or well it up in the air. When they start trying to do Osvaldo Ardiles bicycle kicks from escape to victory, not once, but I saw at least twice and two failed attempts. He seems very confident. As you said, his first contribution yesterday was to shove the ball in behind the goal in the new camp on his cross into the box. So on the back of that dismal presentation event where he let himself and his family down badly, then he crosses into the crowd and then he responds by a couple of really good pieces of action. So obviously the confidence is there. I've commentated on him playing for Denmark and he looks a capable international player. He'll be at the Euros with his country. He may well have a good tournament, good competition. So I don't think it's quite as funny as everybody is making it out, but it's not the £100 million players that we've seen them buy in recent seasons, like Dembele, like Coutinho, like Griezmann. This might just go to show that there is good value. If you're buying a player that you just want as backup to come off the bench, to fill in for the other players in certain games, then, you know, why go out and spend 50, 60, 80, 100 million on players? And, you know, we've seen it does cause issues if those players ever find themselves on the bench. The minute he starts moaning about not getting opportunities, though, that's when he's shown the door and he could kiss goodbye to that 4.5-year contract.
Well, he does seem modest about it, doesn't he? He seems a nice bloke, doesn't he, Martin Braithwaite? Yeah. So I do wish him well. I think the contrast that I made at the time, though, Terry, was that Erling Haaland, who seems to score every time he kicks the football, went for 20 million. Now, I know there's a lot of agents' fees. I know he's with Mino Raiola and people don't like that. But, you know, why wasn't he pursued by more clubs? It's just baffling, isn't it? It's, you know, he's moved to a new club and he keeps just lashing the ball into the net every time he plays.
And now I've seen Real Madrid are looking at him, but it's a bit late now. I mean, they've got the money to go and blow, you know, buy him and blow Borussia Dortmund out of the water in terms of attracting him to the Bernabeu. But why wasn't that, you know, why wasn't the bigger clubs, you know, more serious about getting him? So fair play to Borussia Dortmund for picking him up. As you said, every time he kicks the ball, it's a goal. It's ridiculous. But, you know, I don't have a lot of faith in clubs' scouting networks, you know. So it's players do slip through the net. But with Haaland, it was an obvious one, wasn't it? Everybody knew about him. And I was surprised that he went for such a cheap transfer fee. And it's proven to be a bargain for Dortmund.
Yeah, yeah. And probably, from his point of view, not a bad move, Dortmund, because they give young players an opportunity, don't they? And he's in the team and he's playing Champions League. And so that is better than going anywhere where he would have struggled to play. That said,
Luka Jovic.
Yeah, precisely.
He's not even in the squad today. So yeah. There you go, Benzema. There's no pressure on your position whatsoever.
And that said, Haaland would have been playing for Barcelona now, wouldn't he? Because Suarez is out and they're short-handed up front. Dembele's out as well. Anyway, what about their performance? So the goal-shy Messi finally has delivered something for Barcelona. Been waiting ever so long, haven't we? Four games without a goal. And then he goes waltzing through Eibar. Now, we haven't talked about this, Terry, but I'm guessing you weren't impressed by Eibar's performance in this game.
No, actually, on the contrary. I wasn't impressed with Barcelona's performance. I thought it was sloppy, untidy, too many players. I'm seeing Junior Firpo backheading it here and there, and Nelson Semedo trying flicks and fanning about with the ball. They're living off the back of the success that Barcelona have had over the last decade with players that, I mean, Junior Firpo's only been there 5 minutes and he's not been a great success. And I see him backheeling it and I'm thinking, you're not a Barcelona player yet, mate. You might be in terms of the registration and you're playing the odd game or so in the first team. But don't start thinking you're Dani Alves at the moment. So I thought it was a dreadful performance from Barcelona. I thought Eibar had far too many chances. They had a couple of goals disallowed. One was really harsh. Ter Stegen, I thought, was busier than you'd expect for a team that wins the game 5-0. There was last-ditch defending all over the place. I thought it was a really untidy performance. I thought Busquets played well and Messi was the difference. Arthur showed signs of improvement. I think he really suffered under Valverde in terms of losing belief and confidence. And there's one or two signs now that he's getting his form back that we all thought was so impressive last season. But no, I think it was a wretched performance from Barcelona. Griezmann wasn't at the races, nowhere near it. I wasn't sure what position Vidal played, but he was effective. I thought Eibar did all right. I think what lets them down is the lack of quality, I have to say, in central defence. You're looking at Arbery, who's been a full-back, come centre-back for most of his career. When he's playing against Lionel Messi, it's a complete mismatch. The same with Esteban Burgos, who's the central defender. Alvaro Tejero is a young player making his way. It really was. I thought Messi was the totally the difference in that game. I mean, he even tried to set Griezmann up for a sitter, and Griezmann fluffed it, and Messi had to still finish it off. I think there's, for a team now that are 2 points clear with the way that they've been playing recently, if I was a Barcelona fan, my only hope would be that they rise to the challenge in terms of a more difficult challenge for them. So Betis, I thought they played well against Betis. Thought they should have won by more goals. I was concerned that they conceded again against Betis and conceded chances. But they were far better in that game than what we've seen in other weeks since Setién has been manager. But they're winning games. Messi's back amongst the goals. You look at that 5-0. No, I didn't think Eibar were bad at all. I thought it was a clear evidence that if you're outclassed by, in this case, an individual player that gets an impressive four-goal tally, then, you know, as I say, Esteban Burgos, Arbier, and one or two others, they just couldn't deal with Lionel Messi.
Yeah, that was my interpretation of it, which is why I wondered whether you dislike the Eibar performance. In my view of it was that Barca were poor, but when it mattered, they sort of waltzed through a fairly powder-puff defence when it, you know, when it mattered. And Eibar, in the end, didn't put up enough resistance. And a Barca off form, still won by 5-0. Can I ask you a question? Chegypta says, I wonder why Griezmann seems to overthink everything when he has a clear way to score. Is that fair?
Yes, and I know the answer. It's a lack of confidence. He's not playing with the instinct that he had at Atletico, where he was the star, he was the main man, he played every single game, barely got substituted. There are doubts in his mind, and any striker, you know what, even Messi in the last four games has missed chances you would normally expect him to score, because there's been a slight little chink in his confidence. Now, for someone like Griezmann, who's finding it really difficult. He doesn't look as sharp, doesn't look as energetic, certainly not as tidy in possession, nowhere near as good at finishing as he was at Atletico. And I firmly believe that that's, you know, down to the fact that he's struggling to deal with the fact that at Barcelona, he isn't a superstar. I'm not suggesting for one moment he was arrogant at Atletico Madrid. He just played with that confidence and belief that, you know, if I miss a chance, another one to come along, I'll take that one. Oh, don't worry, I'm not going to get brought off and substituted because I've missed a couple of chances. I'll be on for the 90 minutes, another chance to come my way, I'll take it. So I think it's, but I would like to see him, he works hard defensively. I would like to see him be more aggressive with the ball. So I still feel he's settling in terms of when he gets the ball, his first thought is, where's the number 10? And try and pass to him. And I think that's, you know, something that a lot new players at Barcelona go through, that they don't want to upset Messi, despite the fact he's probably not that bothered if they don't pass to him every time they've got the ball. But I feel that the players at Barcelona that are new to the club think that is what they have to do. And I don't think that's the case. Frankie de Jong doesn't. He often looks for Messi, of course. Why wouldn't you? But he doesn't think obsessively all the time. Every time he gets the ball, the only pass he's on is Messi. Can't find him, then I'll find another pass. He just plays the right pass at the right time. And more often than not, it is Messi. But I think that's what Griezmann's going through.
Right, Terry, you know people are always interested in your experiences as a footballer. So when you were at Spurs or Manchester United or Wimbledon, did the chairman ever hire a PR company to create an army of bots to undermine you on social media?
Funny you should say that, John. No. No. I think we had I would be kind and call him a unique personality as owner of Wimbledon in Sam Haman.
He would have, wouldn't he?
He might have done something like that if the internet had been around back in the 80s. But no, it was it's bizarre. I can't imagine it's true, but so much of it suggests that there's enough to allege that this has gone on at Barcelona. I don't know if people are aware of the story that a PR company was employed by the club to slag off the players and management, basically. They can't be true, surely.
Well, it's too... I can imagine it's true, because it was basically, the story runs that Bartomeu wanted to undermine any potential rivals. And so therefore, it depends how tight a brief you give this company, because there was a company, wasn't there? And they have been disengaged. So basically he said, as soon as it became clear that they were doing anything undermining to the club, then obviously I've put a stop to that. But or the other interpretation of that is that as soon as I got found out, I put a stop to it.
Yeah.
It's just bizarre, isn't it? I mean, you know, they don't seem to have many friends, the current regime, but they don't seem to go anywhere, do they? And, you know, we'll see what kind of concerted opposition there is next time round. Having said all of that, we should probably crack on and do Real Madrid, shouldn't we? Because for all of the problems that we point at Barcelona, they are top of the league again, aren't they? Because Real Madrid, from a couple of weeks ago, we were saying they're looking rock solid, suddenly looking very much not rock solid.
Yeah, I was in the camp, and firmly in the camp that it was too soon for Real Madrid to be trusted in terms of this new addition of keeping clean sheets. I know they was, and they had to be applauded for that. But there was a reason for them having to do that, because they don't score enough goals at the other end. there was a series of games, I'm thinking Valladolid away, where Nacho scored the winner in the last few minutes. The game at Valencia when Courtois had to come up and attack a corner and they equalised. Casemiro was amongst the goals. Ramos, for Ramos getting goals. And all the time I'm thinking, you know, that you're relying heavily on keeping clean sheets because you're not scoring, you're not productive enough at the other end. And my concern for Real Madrid then, if you're a Real Madrid supporter, would be to look at that and think, well, we can't keep, it's not us to continue to keep clean sheets. Now, what you're seeing now is Ramos getting fed up with what's going on at the other end of the pitch, leaving his position. He's being erratic. I've got the last three goals, he's made the same mistake. The two against Celta and the goal against Levante, he's made the same mistake on the last three goals, which might go unnoticed to a lot of people, but he steps out of defence. He steps into a midfield position to follow a striker or to follow an attacking player and leaves a massive hole in behind. Carvajal has made similar mistakes. He's been involved yesterday. In that goal, he took a throw-in in the attacking half of the pitch, throws it into Benzema, Real Madrid's lose possession. Modric is filling in at right back for Carvajal. There's no urgency from Carvajal to get back into his position when Real Madrid don't have possession anymore. And then when you look at the goal from Morales, it's Modric chasing him back. Modric and Varane, the two deepest Real Madrid players. Ramos has gone into midfield. Marcelo's out on the opposite flank. Carvajal took a throw in and couldn't be bothered to get back. And these are familiar mistakes that the same players have made for a number of seasons. I mean, Modric shouldn't be the deepest Real Madrid defender in any circumstances. Hats off to Morales, a sensational strike. I don't think I've ever seen a volley hit with curl. I know Courtois is getting grief because he was beaten at the near post because he's pulling his arms down as well. But when you look at that volley from Morales, it curls. It gets curl on it. He's just going for power. So it was a brilliant finish, but typical of the type of goal that Real Madrid had given up. When you look at the two against Celta Vigo, they conceded goals against Real Sociedad in the Copa del Rey. I always thought they were on a knife edge in terms of they have to keep clean sheets. They have to keep goals against down to a minimum because they haven't got the productivity in the attacking third. And it's not just Benzema. He'll take most of the blame because he's the number nine. He's the striker. But none of the other players in the attacking part of the pitch are doing enough to justify, you know, playing for Real Madrid at the moment, whether that's Vinicius when he comes off the bench and Vasquez yesterday, Isco playing in the front three doesn't work. Gareth Bale, that's not working either. Somehow, and now with Eden Hazard out for probably the rest of the season, if I'm reading reports and seeing it's a reoccurrence of his previous injury, then who's going to stand up? I think it's so important for Real Madrid that somehow Zidane gets Gareth Bale back in confidence, back in the mood, and to try and be a decisive player again. Because, frankly, I don't think the rest of them are at the level that Real Madrid require. I mean, no one's coming anywhere near to filling the boots of Ronaldo. I know there's not going to be a player that gets 50 goals a season, but no one's going to get even half that this season.
And then, therefore, obviously, a huge game coming up against Manchester City this week. So, again, it's flipped over from a couple of weeks ago. City were looking out of sorts and Real Madrid looking good. It's gone the other way around. It still remains a remarkably hard game to call, though.
Yeah, and it's the Champions League. So we know what Real Madrid are like in the Champions League. Ramos will be focused. He'll be hoping that it's a two-legged game, so I don't see Ramos tearing upfield with half an hour to go and playing at centre-forward and risking everything at the back. He has to be more disciplined than that. But Man City, with their passing, with their movement, their quality of players, Real Madrid have to really look at the mistakes they've made. And certainly the last three goals they've conceded, they're very similar. Ball in behind, players getting pulled out of position, and they have to get back to being as solid as they were three, 4 weeks ago. To have any chance of beating Manchester City. But like I say, it's the Champions League. Real Madrid have excelled in that competition, despite in recent seasons, the league title being over, you know, not long after Christmas. So they tend to switch it on in this competition. It's wrong. They should be more consistent than that. But I still would make Real Madrid favourites just because of their history and their love for the Champions League competition.
Yeah, although it's hugely important to Man City this year, isn't it? Because they've got no chance of winning the Premier League, and they'll probably got no chance in this competition, certainly next year and probably the year after that as well. But yes, they will. One to look forward to. We can have a chat about that later. Right, so let's talk about Atletico before we have a break. And so, with Simeone locked away up in the stand, I always feel sorry for the poor guy. You know, when the Egyptian pharaohs died, they always took some servants with them and buried them in the pyramids. There's always some guy has to go and sit in the stands with Simeone, isn't there, when he's suspended. He's the one I feel sorry for. So without Simeone, go on.
He was called in Sal, wasn't he, from up in the top of the stand. You could hear him shouting at the players. And I think that for once that Sal could just cock a deaf and pretend couldn't hear us.
Yeah. So without him anyway, they keep attacking, don't they? And João Félix score. Is that actually an entertaining game, wasn't it? It probably helped from the neutral's point of view that Villarreal scored.
Yeah, and I have to be honest, the second half, Atletico overpowered Villarreal. Whenever you saw, even when it was 1-1, whenever you saw a close-up of a Villarreal player, predominantly defenders and midfield players, they looked stressed, totally stressed out, where Atletico turned up the pace, particularly when Trippier and João Félix came on. They stepped up a gear, it was a really good performance in the second half, solid in the first half, thought they deserved the equaliser before half-time. I thought, you know, when you look at the stats for URL, I think only had one shot at goal for most of the game, and it was a special goal from Alcacer to give them the lead. But I thought as the game went on, and you're seeing signs, it was a weird little period for Atletico, wasn't it? Because they had a spell of 5 unbeaten, they'd won 3 on the trot, then it all fell apart quickly. They were good in the Spanish Super Cup, and they took Real Madrid to penalties. And all of a sudden, you're looking, they beat Barcelona in the semi-final of that competition. And then all the space, they lost to Eibar, I think they drew at home to Leganés, and the world fell apart. They had serious injuries to key players in key positions of the pitch. But I have to be honest, I was surprised at the level of performance against Liverpool. But I thought in the second half we saw signs that, you know, it was a classic, stereotypical Atletico Madrid performance. The midfield players are playing well. The back four looks reasonably solid. Trippier coming back certainly helps them, and João Félix looked to be in the mood to, you know, to shove it up everyone that's been moaning about him. He was aggressive. He was selfish. But he looked much better than he did, you know, 6 weeks ago.
Liverpool fans won't agree with this, but it was nice to see classic Atleti in action in the Champions League game. And as I mentioned there at the beginning, they play like that in all games, don't they? Because the commentator, Steve McManaman, was commentating, and they a couple of times they would say, oh, look, Atleti have been forced back to the edge of the penalty area. And I think, no, that's just how they play. It's how they play against Leganés.
Yeah, they're at home there on the edge of the penalty box. It's astonishing, though. It's such a risky tactic because something can go easy. You know, luck can go against you. You know, you might block a shot, but it might get a deflection. It might take it past your goalkeeper. It might take it into the feet of an attacking player who's left with an open chance at goal. But they all feel comfortable. It's remarkable that new players that have joined the club feel comfortable already playing that way. As we said in the podcast, they prefer being underdogs, and they'll claim they're underdogs going into the second leg. But I couldn't see any reason why you would think that Atletico Madrid couldn't win that tie over two legs. They're in a great position now. But I genuinely felt going into the two legs against Liverpool that, you know, even if they got a 0-0, I think they would have been quite content with that at home to try and nick an away goal, to try and keep it solid at the back. So the fact they've got a one goal advantage, I think is a smashing position for them to be in. Yes, it's going to be tough. I know the atmosphere plays a part, but you know a lot of them have played in Champions League finals and internationals. Some players stood out. I thought Thomas Partey was sensational against Liverpool. And thankfully, Renan Lodi was a standout performer as well. A player that's been the easy one to take off. We've seen Sal playing at left back, and you know, during the game, and when Lottie's been taken off, but he was absolutely fantastic against Liverpool. So it's game on. It's going to be tough, but certainly wouldn't rule out Atletico still going through and knocking Liverpool out. It's a game Liverpool know what they're up against. They won't underestimate the task in hand in the second leg.
We'll look forward to that when it's played in about 3 months' time.
Barcelona would have signed another couple of strikers, but then.
A quick question from Charlie about Morata. He says he's looking frustrated. Is he overrated, or are things just not working for him?
He's not working for him. I find him frustrated. I find him frustrating. I think he's got all the attributes you need to be a top-class striker. He's quick. Physically, he's well built. He's got the tools to play up against central defenders. He just never ever puts himself out in terms of aggression. So he looks to me to be like quite an easy personality to dominate. In terms, if you're a central defender, you know that he's not going to get his elbows up. He's not going to leave one on you late. He's going to accept being knocked over. He's going to peel for a foul off the referee every time you touch him. Whereas the fella that came on the other night, Diego Costa, though he can only play 8 minutes before being out injured again, know it's the opposite with him. He's got the tools, but he's used them to his maximum. It doesn't appear that he's going to be capable of playing much longer for Atletico due to the, I think it's another back injury he's picked up. So similar to Hazard in rushing back too soon for a big game. Hopefully it's just a minor injury to Costa, but the fact that he's back again, which he's had surgery on. But Costa's used it, and I was hoping that Morata would take something from playing or being at the same club and playing with Costa. Because if he added that side to his game, to be more decisive, to be more aggressive, then he would take some stopping. But unfortunately, his personality perhaps certainly isn't the same as Costa's. He works hard. He does put in a shift. But I just think he lacks that killer instinct that Diego Costa has.
Yeah, it's a shame you can't surgically remove Diego Costa's aggression and stick it into Alvaro Morata, isn't it?
Exactly.
Right, let's take a break and then we'll come back and discuss the rest of La Liga. Welcome back to El Tel and John's La Liga Weekly. Well, Getafe, notorious snowflakes, Terry, aren't they? So they hammer. Well, it's 2-0. Very, very good result against Ajax. Not quite a hammering, is it? But they gave them a chasing, didn't they? They properly Getafe'd them. And then they come back into La Liga and Sevilla, who, their star is not a million miles away.
No.
Do a job on them. 3-0 away win for Sevilla is a terrific result. Their best result for ages.
Yeah, and much needed win for Sevilla. I think Lopetegui was under a bit of pressure. I made the point earlier in the season, I'm not a fan of the style. And when I don't think most Sevilla fans will be particularly in love with the style of play. So therefore, you have to win. You can't afford to be a losing team. And recently, Sevilla have been dropping points, not winning games of football. And therefore, I knew that Lopetegui was going to come under pressure because the style he's chosen to play, as you said, is very similar to Getafe. It's not the way we've become accustomed to seeing Sevilla play over the last 10 or 15 years. So it's a risky tactic. In this particular game, though, you're right. They did out, Getafe. Goals from set pieces. They're a physical presence. The team is big. It's strong. It can be quite direct, or it was in that game. So it was a surprise, but also we have to bear in mind Getafe are not used to playing European football. A night playing against Ajax, who were Champions League semi-finalists last season, all the emotion that comes with that. I'm not a lover of making excuses for teams for playing too many games, but I kind of understand why it was a tiny little bit flat in Getafe's performance against Sevilla. So, I mean, Sevilla have got, players that are accustomed to playing in European competitions, even if they're new players. They've been playing in European competitions for their other teams. So the fact that they played Thursday and Sunday, fair play to Jorge Molina, his interview after the game said, no excuses, but not using that as an excuse. We just were outplayed on the day by, you know, a physical opponent in Sevilla.
And Sevilla got a draw in their Europa League game as well, didn't they? So, yeah, we'll see. Yeah, not a, it was a very, very useful goal at the end, wasn't it? And Nesri got it, didn't he, for them on Thursday night. Right, Valencia. We're talking about bad weeks. Poor old Valencia hanging on by a thread against Atalanta. Just, worst team on the night, weren't they, against the Italians?
Yeah.
And then a proper 3-0 hammering by Real Sociedad. Some good goals in there. Lovely strike by Januzaj at the end. But I guess a fully rested Real Sociedad, having had a week off last week against a ragged Valencia.
Yeah, a bedraggled Valencia with, I think, at least 7 first-team players missing. Mm. And what you got was Mangala and Diakabi playing centre-back. It looked like they'd never played together before. Mangala then comes off at half-time. I believe he was injured as well. You take out Gaia, Gabriel Paulista, Garay and Florenzi. That's your first choice, back four missing. And then you're missing Rodrigo, Maxi Gomez and Coquelin in midfield. They've been at stretching point all season. It's going to blight their season. They're not going to qualify for next season's Champions League. There's too many good teams above them now. And there's no real evidence that these injured players are going to be back anytime soon. I think Garay's out for the rest of the season. So it's incredible when a team suffers in that way. You have to try and find, are there reasons, you know, why have the players been picking up injury after injury? And at the moment, it's clear, it's not an opinion, it's clear they've become too easy to play against. They're conceding goals left, right and centre. There needs to be a change in system. I don't think Dani Parejo can cope any more playing in a midfield two with two wide players. I think that if they're going to continue to do that, they have to wait for Coquelin to be fit. I think if Parejo plays in midfield, it has to be in midfield three. So I think there's big issues at Valencia. And, you know, you have to look at their opponents, Real Sociedad. They are sensational to watch at the moment. Such a young team. Nacho Monreal is having the time of his life. He looks like he's 23 years old, like the rest of them. And, you know, they're just brilliant to watch. You wondered whether Paul Tua was going to be missed, but Januzaj is chomping at the bit, came in for him. Played absolutely brilliant, worked his socks off, scored a brilliant goal. Isak's ruling the roost up front. Marino looks a class act. Other guards, you know, it just goes on. Oyarzabal, you go through the whole team. It's full of young talent. It's going to be interesting to see how this evolves, because if they continue improving as they are, I know Odegaard might disappear, but the rest of them, if they continue improving as they are and they can keep the group together, where they are now in the league is 6 game in hand to get away to Eibar. If they win that, they go level 3rd. And I think in years to come, next 2 or 3 years, if they stay together, then, you know, we could see them maybe, unlikely as it sounds now, challenging for the title.
Ooh, big shout, big shout.
Yeah, no, I think they're brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
Yeah. Although the recent history of any team that comes really good, any small, medium-sized club that does really well, suddenly gets plundered, don't they, for all of their best players. But I suppose you'd like to go there and see what happens, wouldn't you? You'd like to have a season, say, getting in the Champions League, surprising people, and then see if the big clubs come and nick all your best players. But that's it could easily happen.
That's the big problem.
Yeah, yeah. Can we have a look at the bottom of La Liga? A couple of really big games. Celta Vigo 1, Leganés 0. And how telling it was that Leganés, obviously having lost Braithwaite, having lost both of their strikers then in January and then February, lose 1-0 to a relegation rival that had 10 men for most of the game.
Yeah, and Javier Aguirre's answer to having those strikers is to field the team with left-backs and right-backs. he played a back five, and then he played a left back in midfield in Kevin Rodriguez. Yeah. Jonathan Silva was playing left wing back. Bustinza's playing right wing back. When Bradovic got sent off after 21 minutes, the right decision. He doesn't look a nasty player in particular, but it was a bad challenge. He was apologetic. It was the right call. Celta used their indignation about how such a horrible decision it was from the referee, when it clearly was a red card. but it galvanised them. You know, the recent run of form, the injustice of going down to 10 men despite it being the right decision, led to them putting up a really good fight, and they couldn't believe their luck that their the opposing team never changed their game. You know, they stayed solid at the back, didn't show any ambition. He had two strikers on the bench, which he only chose to use one of them. He put Oscar Rodriguez on at half-time, but as Saleh came on later in the second half, Miguel Angel Guerrero was on the bench and never came on. Carrillo played a lone furrow up front. So it lacked ambition. It looked like Aguirre had a plan that he was going to stay in the game for 70 minutes or whatever and then open it up and then have a little bit more of an attempt to take all 3 points. But the goal came from Aspas in the 62nd minute and Leganés had just couldn't respond. They couldn't change mode from ultra-defensive to trying somehow to find their way back in the game with an equaliser. So I think Leganés, despite having the sympathy of a lot of people, actually got all they deserved this weekend in this performance with this attitude, with a narrow 1-0 defeat against 10 men, Celta Vigo, who played with 10 men for 70 minutes.
And Espanyol might look back at the end of this season on that red card for David Lopez in their game at Valladolid, Terry, and they might have cause to regret that come the end of the season. It was a big game. It's a chance for 3 points, wasn't it, against a Valladolid team struggling to actually win games, although they've always been competitive in the matches. But a big, big win for Valladolid, just to put that bit of daylight back between themselves and the proper relegation strugglers.
Yep, 7 points clear now. It's nowhere near enough. They've still got plenty of work to do, but 29 points. Sandro getting a goal as well. I still see a player in him. I still see a player in him as well. And I think I use the evidence of his form at Malaga, and it's clear he hasn't got the confidence he had. Tough time at Everton and various clubs on loan. But he's still only 24, and I still think that, you know, there's the possibility there that he can recapture that form. It was a great goal. We took it really well. Valladolid deserved it. But again, it was tough on Espanyol playing with 10 men from the 25th minute on. Silly second challenge from David Lopez. I think both yellow cards were harsh. I think the first one should be a yellow card for Oscar Plano as opposed to David Lopez because of the feigning injury, feigning the blow to the face, pretending he's been elbowed in the face. The referee bought it, showed the yellow card. Therefore, on the second challenge from Lopez, he can't throw himself in like that. There's no point, there's no value. You've got nothing to gain from winning a challenge that's, you know, just over the halfway line, chucking yourself in, risking the second yellow, which is exactly what he got. So, and with no Raúl de Tomás, you know, they're getting cut adrift now, Espanyol, and it's 19 points, they're bottom. It's, you know, the gap has opened up because of the form of Celta in particular. Has meant dragging teams like Eibar in particular into the relegation fight. But it looks tough for Espanyol. If Raúl de Tomás is out for a month, that's them done, I think.
Yeah, and it would have been so good for them if they could have dragged Valladolid into it. But they didn't, and they have virtually no chance in the Europa League now. Espanyol, because of the quality of Wolves finishing, I must say, Diogo Jota's goals, and obviously the effort by Ruben Neves, which we've seen before, English football fans or watchers of Wolverhampton Wanderers, but they are just about
done.
There's
only one player playing for Espanyol that played today. So yes, I think a lot of people said, oh, Espanyol, we knew they were rubbish because they're bottom of the league and you're playing their reserves. Yeah. So they completely have thrown that tournament. I understand it. It's a lesson to other small clubs, other clubs that don't often compete in Europe, that unless you're equipped for it, don't celebrate it because it could be the worst thing that happens to you.
Yeah, we have seen
the case with Espanyol. Yep, Real Sociedad did it once.
Yeah, Betis went down in Europe. Villarreal went down in the Champions League.
Yep, exactly.
So it does happen, doesn't it? Because there's not a lot of difference in quality, is there, between the European race and the relegation race often in La Liga.
And it goes to show how well Getafe have done this season to maintain domestic form.
Yeah. Yes. Crazy game Friday night, Terry, wasn't there? 3-3 draw between Betis and Mallorca.
Oh, brilliant. It was one of the games of the season. It's been a while since we've seen a Betis game like that. I know the Barcelona game was tight, but this reminds me of the original days of Quique Setién when he first came into the club. And it was, I mean, and fair play to Mallorca, who seemed to have thought, well, we've got 1 point away from home all season. we've tried to be solid. We've tried to be hard to beat. Sod it. We're just going to go all out attack. They took the lead twice. Cucho Hernandez has made a real difference to them. And he's going to be a problem when they for opposing teams when they're playing away from home. He sort of drops in off the left side. He's not exactly up front with Budimir, but he doesn't drop back into a defensive position. And on the counter-attack, him, Budimir and Kubo, the three goal scorers, funny enough, they caused Betis loads of problems. Betis were great going forward. Canales and Fekir were sensational. And it was a rip-roaring game. Great start to the weekend's fixtures. And I kind of find it hard to see where Ruby is going wrong. I like the tactics. He's picking primarily the right teams in terms of team selection, but just something is lacking somewhere. I think Carvalho not being fully fit, you kind of feel he's been rushed back, and that little bit of defensive solidity the holding midfield player has to give perhaps isn't there at the moment, but that's understandable. He's been out most of the season, second game back. First one was Barcelona, which he got through okay in that one. But this one, he looked to be tired and jaded and just off the pace. So it was a brilliant game and a point away from home. Only the second of the season for Mallorca.
Osasuna 0, Granada 3. Terrific result for Granada, wasn't it? In what's, you know, sort of a mid-table clash. Good quality finishes by Darwin Machis. Who got two of them, Fulke with the other one. Osasuna, they've struggled since Jimmy Avila's been out, haven't they, to score the goals. He made such a difference for them.
Yeah, but he wouldn't have made any difference today, the way they played. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. I'm watching the game from kickoff, and I'm trying to look, and I'm trying to see who's playing where. And I've never seen a team shuffle around so much in the first 3 or 4 minutes of a game. Literally, I was thinking, right, he's on the right, he's on the left. No, they've swapped sides. Oh, they're both on the same side now. What the hell's going on here? Harry Danny shoves it into midfield, straight to an opposing player, who plays it back out wide to Darwin Machis, who just is totally unopposed from the halfway line. Runs forward and blasts one in at the near post. Then he repeats exactly the same move 20 minutes or so later. And with so little possession, Granada were 2-0 up, then got the third just before half-time, and the game was done. It was finished. But I found it really confusing, the way Osasuna were lining up. There was three or four players in particular just chasing around. When they got the ball and they strung together six or seven passes, it looked quite useful. But when they lost possession, everyone was out of position, and it was a bizarre performance from Osasuna.
Right, so one more game, which was Alaves, Athletic, dramatic finish to this one. And Athletic just can't win a game, Terry. They can't in the cup, obviously, which is obviously very good news indeed for Garitano, who I imagine will be under a lot of pressure if they don't crack on and, you know, potentially win the Copa del Rey.
It's 10 without a win in the league, and they've lost the last four, and they've come against that. They've three of them come against Alaves, Real Sociedad and Osasuna, you know, neighbours pretty much. So last week I thought they should beat Osasuna. Today I think they've been really unlucky to get beat. It was a little bit more even than the Osasuna game, but, you know, Alaves get the late winner. You saw the dejection on Nyaki Williams because he'd come off prior to the goal. Sitting on the bench, and they just look at a lost bunch at the moment. It's a lack of goals. It's similar to Real Madrid. When you put your defence under that much pressure, you know, they will make mistakes, and the mistakes are costly because you're not able to score at the other end. Did you see the goal, by the way? I want to know what you think about Athletic's interesting set-piece routine. When someone runs over the ball and just literally stands on it, and then Meunier dribbles off with it. Yes. The ball didn't move.
Yeah. So, right. Okay. I didn't notice they didn't move because it should move, shouldn't it? If it doesn't move,
didn't move. He trod on it. He ran over it and trod on it. It didn't move. And then Meunier dribbles away. And now we've got VAR. And they didn't pick it up. And I'm thinking, how is that? It shouldn't be allowed. It's clearly the ball is still a circumference, isn't it? It has to move the full circumference. Because I can remember in the past teams taking a cheeky corner where they walk over and someone just touches it lightly and walks away. And then someone used to come across and then dribble into the penalty area and shoot. And everyone else is going, he hasn't taken it. I thought it's, you know, and that people used to be able to get away with that. But with VAR, and someone runs over the ball, I'm guessing it was Yuri Bacici, he just runs over it and treads, puts his foot on top of it. It doesn't move, I promise you. It just stands on it. Yeah. Then when Young dribbles, they cross it. I think Bacici crossed it. Someone crossed it. Someone miskicked it in just on the edge of the penalty area, didn't they? I think it was Vesca miskicked it. Raul Garcia finished it off really nice. Clever goal. Lots of imagination. Yeah. Something they've worked on. But I didn't think it was a legitimate goal. I don't want to upset the Athletic Bilbao supporters or listeners to the podcast. But no, I feel for them at the moment because of when you're playing reasonably well, you're pretty solid at the back. You've been undone by a penalty and a goal from a set piece today. It's tough going. But they need to somehow, you know, try to find more goals. Adams is 39. He's on the bench. If he's fit and able and it's his last season, then surely Garitano has got to, at some time, start him. Otherwise, there's no point in being there.
Yeah. Right. Let's very quick preview, Terry, because people need to get on with their lives, don't they? But what a week coming up. So Champions League games, obviously the end of the Europa League ties, and then the Champions League games for Real Madrid, Barcelona, huge games coming up for them. And, of course, a Clásico coming up in a terrific slot, Sunday evening next weekend. And you're out there? You're going out to Spain for that one, Terry, I think, for La Liga TV?
Yep. Yes, in Barcelona, so I'm not in Madrid, but right. No, okay. Of course, looking forward to that one. I didn't expect it to be the situation a couple of weeks ago when Real Madrid went top and were looking strong, but draw against Celta, defeat against Levante has turned it all around. Barcelona not convincing, but I think that both teams reserve their best form, their focus, their concentration for the big games, and I think that will come in the Champions League this week. Napoli away for Barcelona on Tuesday. So, you know, Real Madrid will argue that they get an extra day's rest before the Clásico. Man City go to the Bernabeu on Wednesday night. So, no travelling for Real Madrid. I think it's the games this week. Can't wait to watch them. As soon as Man City, Real Madrid was pulled out of the hat, as soon as Liverpool, Atletico Madrid were pulled out of the bowl, I shouldn't say hat, I was always looking forward to those games. So, Barcelona and Napoli would be a good one as well.
Yes, yeah, it should be good. Improving Napoli, actually, aren't they at the moment? So,
not an easy one.
Yes, yeah. It was a bad start to the season, but they're making progress, so it won't be easy for Barcelona. We'll see how they get on. We'll have a look back on that next time we have a chat. And obviously, the Clásico coming up. So enjoy your football this week, and we'll see you again soon. Bye bye.